Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/greek.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands, skies and waterways and pay our respects to all elders past and present. We pay our respects to the world's oldest continuing culture.
Hello everyone, this is Pano Apostolou. You're listening a podcast by SBS Greek. Greek-Australian Dr. Themistocles Kritikakos is the author of the book Armenian, Greek and Assyrian Genocide, Recognition in the 21st Century Australia. It is a study of genocide memory, identity and political recognition in contemporary Australia. The book of Themistocles Kritikakos offers a powerful and original contribution to the study of genocide memory and political recognition in Australia. I have the pleasure to have Dr. Themistocles Kritikakos in our studio today. Themistocles, thank you very much for accepting the invitation of SBS Greek to talk about your book.
Thank you, Mr. Apostolou Pano, for having me on the show today. It's a great honor.
It's not the first time that you are in our studios. You came here in 2018. You were still working on your PhD back then, is that correct?
That is correct. I was still a PhD student, candidate, and it was very early on in my research that I had an interview with you back then. The research has really evolved and changed over the years, of course. It went from a PhD thesis to being rewritten as a book and expand on particular themes. I think they're very important relating to memory and recognition.
Give us the definition of genocide. What is genocide?
Genocide, as we understand it, is the intent to destroy in whole or in part a group, a racial, religious, national, ethnic group. The way we understand genocide is that there would be intent to destroy this group, and not only through direct orders. The scholarship on genocide has really evolved the past few years. Now we're looking at patterns of violence, of ideological influence, and other factors rather than just direct orders, which is how genocide used to be understood. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the number of victims is often associated with genocide when people understand genocide, but it's not always the case that there needs to be a large number of victims. It's the intent to destroy that really is the main focus in scholarship now.
Is it a definition that changes through times?
There's the legal definition, but through scholarship over the years, what we see is how do we expand and really understand genocide and what intent means. It definitely evolved over time, and that's why we now see the Greeks and Assyrians as victims in relation to the Armenians.
Mm-hmm. You talked about numbers. It doesn't mean that if we have like hundreds of thousands of millions of people dead to name an act as genocide, correct?
That is correct.
What motivated you personally to research genocide memory in the diaspora?
So I was interested in history, but personally there is a connection with my family. So there were stories I heard growing up from my mother about my maternal grandparents, her parents, who were from Asia Minor. My yaya was from Livisi, which is from southwest Asia Minor, and my papu, who was from Kalamaki in southwest Asia Minor. They resettled in Kastellorizo. Mum was born on the island of Kastellorizo, and we're very proud of our Kastellorizian heritage growing up, but we also heard about our Asia Minor heritage and the stories of our grandparents, even though they were fragmented, but the traumatic experience that they faced in Asia Minor, losing family members. And this, to me, was a motivation to further research the topic. And of course, the recognition efforts of Armenians, which are international, really put things into perspective. Why were the Greeks and Assyrians less visible? Why is there cooperation now in Australia? How did this come about? Because that, to me, was fascinating that there was that level of cooperation that led to state-level recognition.
Can we name also that there is an intergenerational trauma as a reason why you're doing this research?
I think with any descendant, you're struggling with the fragmented narratives that are passed onto you. The silence about particular topics or the gaps in information in the narratives and missing information mm-hmm. with regard to the history, the familial history. So the silence to me through my interviews with regard to my research was interesting, the most interesting, because silence affected descendants just as much as the stories that were shared, because they're struggling with a past that they feel that they're very familiar with, and they carry the burden of resolving or coming to terms with this past, but at the same time, they are a bit distant from, and they're really trying to get information, mm-hmm. and it's a sort of a lifelong journey to put things together to make create a narrative.
Can you give us a few more historical details about the Greek genocide? Because there is a lot of literature out there about what happened the last century, especially last century.
The Greek genocide, as we understand it now, this has really evolved over the years. There's two parts. There's the way of remembering, and then there's the research that's developed over the years. The way of remembering, really, within Greece, is that there is largely these events were forgotten because of the Greco-Turkish War, wartime violence, the Megali there. It was the framework within Greece. There was self-blame and self-criticism, I think, within Greece in relation to the Asia Minor catastrophe and the Greco-Turkish War, without taking into consideration the broader genocidal process that Greeks suffered alongside the Armenians and Assyrians from 1914 until 1923. And really, it was Pontian Greeks who revived their identity in the 80s that started leading the recognition efforts. Initially, became the recognition efforts became associated with Pontian Greeks, and then Asia Minor Greeks and Eastern Thracian Greeks tried to find their place within their history. But really, there was a lot of fragmentation. And for this narrative to develop and be understood as a Greek genocide, regardless of region, it really was the diaspora in Australia and even the US that led these efforts, that tried to bring together these different stories, these different regional experiences to understand this as a Greek genocide in relation to the Armenians and Assyrians.
You interviewed many people. Were they all from Australia?
Yes, correct. So I conducted over 70 interviews with descendants of survivors across Australia, mainly from the Assyrian and Greek communities, just because their experiences had not really been highlighted. They weren't really heard of as much as the Armenians, who are very, very active with their recognition efforts and with research and capturing the history. So that was across Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Adelaide.
Wasn't that very difficult for you to take in all these stories? Because I'm sure these stories are quite traumatic and awful, no?
They're definitely traumatic and awful to hear. There were very horrific stories that were shared of extreme violence. At the same time, when you're a descendant of survivors, it helps understand and ask questions, but also understand the perspectives of the person you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I did try as much as possible to maintain that scholarly distance to firstly respect the stories, but understand my role as a researcher. And I think over time, I was really able to, you know, conduct the role of the academic, so to speak, accurately or in the appropriate way.
Why do you think we haven't moved on with the recognition of the Greek genocide in Australia? Is it a fault by the politicians, by the leaders of the Greek communities around Australia? The Greek Australian lobby did not work effectively.
I think that the main issue in terms of national recognition has really been the narrative around Gallipoli and reconciliation between Australia and Turkey, mm-hmm. and the alleged words of reconciliation from Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founding father of Turkey, who's a highly respected figure in Turkey. But what this narrative does is overlook the broader genocidal process from 1914 until 1923. It also overlooks the fact that Australians provided humanitarian aid and relief to survivors and refugees from 1915 until 1930. The Anzacs witnessed what happened, the prisoners of war that witnessed what happened and had written about it. Australian media had reported on the violence and deportation of the three communities. At the same time, this history is part of history. The three groups are trying to reconnect with it and trying to bring it to public attention, but there is a difficulty bringing it to national attention.
But do you think that the so-called, for many people, multiculturalism plays a silencing role? Because we are coming together in this amazing country, that we need to lower our standards and not to talk about things that can probably divide our multicultural communities.
I think that's a great point. I think that there is that limit to the recognition efforts, as limitations with bringing difficult histories or what is deemed controversial by politicians or the government to public attention, because there is that tension between narratives and stories within the public sphere, but even at a national level. So there is a need for coexistence as well. But at the same time, I do think being in the diaspora, being in a multicultural country, allows these voices to be amplified and heard in ways that they wouldn't have been in their homeland, because they're removed from those geopolitical issues. Mm-hmm. At the same time.
But we need to follow the international law when we talk about genocide. And when we talk about international law, my next question is, are there any genocides happening today?
There are many different cases of genocide that are taking place, or cases of ethnic cleansing. And if you look at, for example, the Armenians of Artsakh, who have been cleansed and removed from the region by Azerbaijan and supported by Turkey, mm-hmm. This is rooted in the denial of the genocide that took place in the late Ottoman Empire, in anti-Armenian sentiment. And you also look at the Assyrians, and another group that have experienced genocide several times since the late Ottoman Empire. Really, the Assyrians are stateless people. They rely on the diaspora to lobby and give them a voice, mm-hmm. because they are still being persecuted in countries such as Iraq and Syria. The Kurds are another group. They're a group that is interesting historically, because they had a history within the late Ottoman Empire where there were members of Kurdish groups that also were aligned with the Ottomans, and they were part of the genocidal process, but at the same time have been a minority that is oppressed and seeking their own rights, political, cultural rights within Turkey in the present.
Do you think people are easier to accept genocides today than it was before? Or do you think the communities, the societies around the world are talking about genocides? Well, we need to talk about them more?
I think it has become a term that, it's a loaded term, so there's a lot of the political consequences. When you label something as genocide, there are political consequences, and that's why some governments may be reluctant, because there's geopolitical considerations as well. But at the same time, the definition of genocide is constantly debated. How particular instances of violence can be interpreted are constantly debated amongst scholars. And this has been the case with the Greeks and Assyrians. So it took them quite a while through research to really be accepted as victims alongside the Armenians, for example.
You told me before we began the interview that you were coming from the university. What are you doing there, Themistocles?
So currently I'm in a professional role, but previously I did do a bit of teaching and a bit of research as well.
What's the next step from now on?
It was a major challenge to focus on three groups, to be honest, and conducting interviews and looking at not only family history, but how groups cooperate, how they start dialogue, the challenges they face, how they negotiate memories, particularly given the Armenians were active since the 1960s with the recognition efforts and had really established themselves in the research and scholarship. So for me, it would be interesting to continue the research, looking at this from different angles. So I think it would be important to look at present-day issues that the communities face in terms of the Armenians of Artsakh, what's happened to them, the Assyrians in the Middle East, but also to see whether there could be dialogue with Indigenous Australians, because what they share, these three communities, with Indigenous Australians is the need for truth-telling, for acknowledgement, and they also share intergenerational trauma. So whether they can establish dialogue that's consistent and sustained would be an interest of mine.
Has the Australian federal government recognised the Greek genocide?
The Australian federal government has not recognised the genocide of the Greeks, Armenians and Assyrians. It's only been recognised at a state level in South Australia, in New South Wales and Tasmania. this is an ongoing struggle, I think, for the three communities who have really advanced the cooperation in recent years through the Joint Justice Initiative.
Is there any ongoing negotiation, if I can say that, with the federal government from these communities?
From what I've seen, there is constant lobbying and an attempt to also bring to public's attention the Australian connection to the three communities, Australian response to the three communities, and there's an ongoing attempt to try and gain awareness, basically. Mm-hmm. Although the cooperation, I think, has really advanced, and I've noticed that there's been much more dialogue and new forms of remembering within these communities as a joint experience, as an Armenian, Greek, and Assyrian genocide, there is this struggle that they face until now.
How can someone find your work and read it? Is it available online? How can they get your book on their hands?
So my book can be purchased through Palgrave Macmillan's webpage, Springer's webpage, and through Amazon.
Are you thinking of translating into Greek at some point?
I think that would be great. I would love to do that if there was an opportunity to do so.
Dr. Themistocle Kritikako, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Apostolou Panou.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.